Friday. Thank you. September 20th, 2013, and Primetime Sports is on the air. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk presentation. It's the Roundtable on the Fan Radio Network and on Sportsnet in very, 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 very high definition. Yours truly, Bob McCowan, along with Stephen Brunt, John Shannon, and Elliot Friedman around this table. Gentlemen, away we go. Item. The Toronto Argonauts. Long time since we led with that sentence.
Yes.
The Toronto Argonauts.
Well, no, long time since you led with that sentence.
I said we.
I'm saying
I was the royal we again,
I'm saying
John.
You, Bob.
Well, some other places lead with it all the time.
Bingo.
And immediately the entire audience nods off.
Well, let's keep going then.
And I'm worried, and with this delay here, I'm worried that most of ours is already nodded off. The Toronto Argonauts and the Rogers Centre have agreed on a new lease that will see the Argonauts, assuming they continue to exist, which is barely, at the Rogers Centre until 2017. This is a step backwards for the Toronto Blue Jays in some way. A concession that natural grass will indeed take longer to execute than they had otherwise A, planned, B, hoped.
Yeah, I heard that about a month ago, that they were still working on some technical stuff, and that 5 years was the realistic number in terms of when it could happen.
The part two of this equation is there will be no more extensions. That the Toronto Argonauts have got to plan to be somewhere else by 2017. Coincidentally, the owner of the franchise, Mr. CFL, David Braley, who... is either going to buy the other six teams and
seven.
Run it up. Well, yeah, eventually. And if they ever get to the field. And or is going to sell one or even two of the ones he has. He is suggesting he's prepared to divest himself of his CFL interests by 2015. If Mr. Braley divests himself, who would he divest himself to? And who would buy this franchise knowing that they don't have any place else to play? Or they don't have a place to play after 2017? And C, where else could they play? Answers to any of these questions.
Well, Mr. Braley, you know, if you let us roll back the clock here. Dave, you know, this team was purchased out of bankruptcy by Howard Sokolowski and David Sinnemann, who some of whose bills were being actually paid by David Braley.
Sure.
So, you know, David Braley has been the bank of Argonaut for quite some time now. And you know, it depends how far back you want to go. But I think the last guy to make money was Harry Ornest in 1989. I think he's the last person to have a profitable season with the Toronto Argonauts. So right now, in the year following the 100th Grey Cup, which they won at home, I believe they have about 6,500 season's tickets. And they're announcing about 18,000 a game, and the paid is probably, I would say, half that. So that's where they are in the largest market in Canada. Would they be better off in a small stadium? I think we all would agree they would be.
Yes.
But we know that's not going to
be better off in my backyard.
Well, that's probably true. But it's not going to be BMO. I don't.
Well, they said they're keeping it grass. That was part of the press conference today to announce the 92nd leader in the 5-year history yeah. of TSC, that they're going to keep that grass as well.
So that's not happening.
Right.
Right. And plus the conversion costs there were enormous, and they would tick off the soccer crowd. And so that's not happening. So what we're talking about now is, and, you know, and Mr. Braley talked about this in the same when he was talking about selling the team. He said they're looking at stadium options. He thinks the federal and provincial governments will help fund them. He has four communities, I believe he said, that are interested in housing this stadium. And, you know, the one thing you should sit there and say, there's no chance they're going to get government money for, you know, 10 games a year. But
this is Senator David Braley.
This is Senator David Braley, who's a bagman for the Tories. And, you know, they probably owe him. You know, they helped him out with his Grey Cup last year, and I'm sure they would.
They sure did.
So, you know, so the let's say, for the sake of argument, the Toronto Argonauts playing in a 22,000-seat stadium in Vaughan or Milton or Whitby, does that work? Because that's kind of what we're talking about here, I think. Does that work?
Transit?
I'd love to know what the CFL's / Argos research is on where Argonaut fans, albeit they realistically
should just ask them, John.
10 or 12,000. Well, we could do a poll.
Could call them in less time. We could call them before our next commercial break.
Where do they come from? Because I think if you polarize anybody – by moving far east or far west, you're not doing anything right.
I'm not sure that there's enough of them out there to form any kind of consensus.
But I understand.
I'll bet you right now we could pick up the phone and phone the Toronto Argonauts, and they already have that information.
I'm sure they do. I understand your skepticism. All I can do is remind everybody of what really happened in Montreal when they got forced to go to Molson Stadium.
But downtown stadium.
I understand.
There is no downtown stadium.
I understand. There cannot be a downtown stadium. They're not going to reinvent Varsity Stadium one more time.
No, that's over. That's done.
That ship has sailed.
You know, they're not putting one at the Portlands, I don't think. I mean, so the question becomes is can they find a way in the 905 to build a stadium of 20 to 22,000 people to justify a football team?
Well, it is an interesting thing. For those of you unaware of the geography or the of Toronto, the truth of the matter is there's 7 million people, give or take, in the greater Toronto area. This is the fourth largest metropolitan market in North America now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people here. There are nearly a million people, I'm exaggerating a bit, I think it's like 750 or 800,000 in Mississauga.
805.
Is 805? There you go. I have no idea how many there are in Vaughan, which is, and Mississauga is to the west of Toronto. Vaughan is to the north of Toronto. And it's a growing metropolis. It's a little urban sprawl. It doesn't really have
350,000 in Markham.
Doesn't really have a downtown. You have Markham. Now they're trying to build a hockey arena, but that's not exactly going great right now. There are places you can go where theoretically there are enough people in those communities. But here's the interesting point. Do you have to brand it as if you brand it the Toronto Argonauts and stick them in Mississauga, Vaughan, or Markham?
But Bob,
does that sound?
Not the New Jersey Giants.
Yeah,
it's the New York Giants.
You know, I mean, it depends. Like, if some community gives you money and says, as part of it, we'll build you a stadium, but you have to take our name. Well, then they're going to have a decision to make. But I look at the finances of the whole thing, and I wonder if we're kind of missing it a little bit. You know, one of the things that David Braley got when he took over the Toronto Argonauts was a promise of a certain amount of Grey Cups, which, as you mentioned, he got help for. The CFL teams, what do they get a year? Like, what do they get a year in TV money? Like, the league from their broadcast partner gets between $30 and $40 million a year.
The new deal's a little higher than that.
Yeah. So, but it's significant amount of money.
$5 million a year.
So if you get, and what's your salary cap for something?
You ask them what the Argonauts can make money right now. Right now, they're losing $5 or $6 million this year.
But if you get the promise of 2 Grey Cups.
But I don't think they would. They haven't actually done. Now, number one, that Grey Cup, the reason the last Grey Cup was massively profitable
was because of what happened behind the scenes.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean it can't happen again.
But how many Grey Cups can you?
By the way, Mr. Braley has the Grey Cup this year, too.
Where are you going to play the Grey Cup in Toronto? If you move into a 20 or 25,000 seat stadium.
Well, you book the dome for that one week a year.
When it has natural grass in it?
It's got natural grass in it. They're not going to let you in.
Oh, I right. Okay.
You're finished. Yeah. You're finished with the dome.
No, don't say that. Don't forget.
Could you play it on grass once?
Baseball season.
Every 5 years?
Baseball season ends mid-October.
Yeah.
Grey Cup's last week in November.
I wouldn't let them anywhere near it.
No, you wouldn't, but you're a hard ass, Bob.
No. If you have natural grass in there.
But I mean, even from the, you know, I would think, though, there's still an opportunity to put a Grey Cup in Toronto at Rogers Centre if they don't play.
I'm just not sure there are enough Grey Cups to go around right now. You got a new stadium in Winnipeg where they've been promised. You've got a new stadium coming to Hamilton where they, in theory, are going to, they're going to want an option on that.
Ottawa's coming in.
But you know what, Stephen, if you want to keep, and this becomes the big question, if you want to keep the CFL as a presence in Toronto, to sell that team. Look at what Gary Bettman does when he sells his teams. We all sit there and we say there's no way he's going to be able to pull it off, and he always does. And he says, okay, you're going to get an all-star game here. You're going to get a draft here. There's a quid pro quo. If you want to keep the CFL in Toronto, maybe you just have to say to the other owners, they're getting 2 Grey Cups out of every 6.
But you're still asking somebody to lose $20 million in order to make 10.
Well, that's the question.
And that's a tough equation for most people.
The question is, can you make money with 2 Grey Cups and the TV money as it now is?
The other issue for me is we quickly passed over the feds giving money and the province giving money. This is a province that, you know, that gave $700 million to 2 power plants.
Yes, and the Pan Am gameship has sailed as well.
And that's the other issue. The federal government, if they get caught giving money to a football stadium in the largest city in the country, I mean, the people in Calgary are looking for a new hockey arena. Regina is looking for a new football stadium. Well, they have it, but we don't. It's really not being bankrolled by the feds.
Yeah,
they're probably looking for a federal infusion for the stadium halfway between Moncton and Halifax, too. So I'm not sure.
Travel expenses is the key.
I'm not sure all of this makes sense. That I, you know,
well,
that
it doesn't. The minute you start handing out free money, the line gets longer.
Yeah.
Well, I think that. Are we looking at the day? I've always wondered if this was ever going to happen, where the CFL is just not in Toronto.
Well, you know, and it's...
Well, and that's the next point.
Yeah, because we've always said, oh, they can't. They got to be in Toronto for... Well, what are the reasons we always line up?
Corporate money.
Corporate average. Well, you know, right now, you know, like they're getting million plus on broadcasts. Any broadcast that features Saskatchewan Roughriders has a million plus. And you're watching ads for Humpty's restaurants, which, you know, there's the closest one is somewhere... I asked somebody today. Closest one to Toronto is somewhere on Manitoba.
No, but by the way, excellent place for breakfast.
See, there you go. You know, so they're getting, you know, like there's a kind of a micro economy just in, around the Saskatchewan Roughriders. It's actually a substantial economy.
Well, the West is a driver.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
The Prairies are the driver.
Yes. And in terms of media, well, you know, one media company owns them. One media company has nothing to do with them. Newspapers are irrelevant. So, yeah, they would be out of sight, out of mind for the Toronto media. But what's that mean anymore?
Yeah.
I'm not sure it means anything.
Your fans can create a very strong online community if you want to. I mean, I think the bigger issue that the CFL faces, not only this, is they need younger fans. And that, to me, is actually probably a bigger question than the whole Toronto market.
They have younger fans. They have younger fans in Saskatchewan.
I was going to say, they have younger fans. Ontario.
In Southern Ontario, you think so?
Absolutely. This is the only, believe it or not,
I went
in the
to
CFL,
a game this year. I didn't see very many...
Tell you what,
young faces there.
The only place in my opinion, the only place where the CFL is struggling right now in so many ways is here.
Well, actually, Montreal hasn't sold out a game since they expanded the stadium, so they haven't. They've never drawn 25,000 people in Montreal.
And Hamilton's going to be a real interesting test because they haven't exactly knocked everybody's socks off in Guelph, and now they're going to have their new facility, and they had trouble with the old one. Is this new stadium going to fix that problem?
I think it's going to help a great deal.
I think it will help, but there's always that bubble. There's always that new stadium. You get that burst in any sport.
But it's a tiny stadium. It's 22,000 seats.
But I mean, to your point, Stephen, I mean, Bob Wettenhall, I don't think has ever made money on the Alouettes. I would tell you that he's always lost a little bit. It's his family toy.
He's an old guy, too, so you know, they're going to be thinking about succession plans for Bob pretty soon.
And his kids don't want the team.
But, you know, I'm just saying there was a limit to growth there, John, that we didn't actually think was there. You know, when everybody said when they go from 20 to 25, man, they're going to have 25 every game. Yeah. They've never had 25.
That was Larry Smith's little promise, too.
Well, and
he's made a lot of promises.
You know, and they've had a good team the whole time.
But you look at the way, even in Winnipeg, where the crowds are, the West is doing...
The West
Pretty
is doing
well.
Fantastically well.
Very well.
Well, so maybe the question is, we always focus on, well, if the Argonauts leave, if they cease to exist or move someplace else, can this league survive? And we look at it from a Toronto-centric perspective. In Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. BC, in the West... Do you think they'd care if the Toronto Argonauts didn't exist?
No.
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 I don't think they would.
Do you think one person would stop going or stop being interested or perceive the product to be any less than what it
is?
You might sell more tickets in Hamilton, too.
Well, if I move the Argonauts to the Maritimes, if I move the Argonauts to the Maritimes and after next year I still was able to maintain 9 CFL teams without, you know, the GTA, I think the league would be just fine. I really do.
I don't disagree with that notion, except there is nobody in the Maritimes that is even apparently interested in kicking that football. And, Brunt, how's ticket sales this year for the Maritimes?
They struggled to sell 16,000 in Moncton for the game this weekend. So that's the bloom's off the rose a little bit. Now, Halifax is a different place. That's a tricky market. You know, and if you could capture the regional pride thing down there, you'd have a chance.
You think you reach the point, Stephen, though, where I look at these games, it's like enough, give us our team or something.
I think that's the thing.
I think there's a bit of that.
Yeah, like
if
they have their own team, they might support it a lot better.
But who, name the guy, the company, anybody who's standing up and saying, okay.
No, but I tell you what, there's enough money. There's enough money
in Toronto to buy the Argonauts a million times over. But the guys who've got that money are smart enough to say, I'm not just going to piss it away by buying the Toronto Argonauts, which is what you'd be doing.
Yeah, I haven't heard the one. If the Irvings or the McCains or those kind of people were standing up, they'd already have a team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all they'd have to do is say, "We want in."
And ironically enough, both have stood up to run junior hockey teams.
Yeah, that's right.
Both families are heavily involved. One in St. John and the other in Moncton.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because they like the business of junior hockey.
It's a pretty good business.
It's a pretty good business.
The CFL? Not so good.
Depends on where you are.
Yeah. But they know the Maritimes better than any of us.
By the way, Mr. Braley, if he was to sell a team, he'd be selling this one because the one in Vancouver can do okay.
Well, I think he'd sell this one first for sure. Whether he sells the other one too, I don't know.
He said he's selling them both.
That's what he says. We'll take the break. We'll move along when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. A few minutes past the hour, Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. McCowan and Friedman, Shannon and Brunt around the table. We'll see where this, run this up the flagpole and see if anybody salutes. We may go to the bullets a little bit early here because there's a bunch of things to talk about. I don't know how much meat there will be on this bone. There's controversy right now surrounding Robert Griffin III, the quarterback of the Washington Redskins, second-year quarterback, who was hurt last year. Most expected he would not be ready to play. In fact, I think a doctor's projection at one point was mid-season.
Yeah, well, then James Andrews, who's the team doctor in Washington.
It's amazing how that happened.
Yeah, said in the offseason, this guy's remarkable, he's recovering. And, of course, everybody has the memory of Adrian Peterson fresh in their minds, a guy who came back really fast.
And was told, it would take much longer and had a stunning season. But there's a constituency out there that says he's not ready to play. He's still, if he's not hurt, he's scared of being hurt. He's throwing a lot off his off foot.
Mm-hmm.
He is clearly backing away if he senses pressure and feels like he's going to be hurt, rather than stepping into throws. Are they micro-analyzing this guy? Is he just had two mediocre performances, or is there something going on there?
Well, let's remember, Bob, he didn't throw one ball during training camp. The first time he threw a ball was in that first Sunday night game, the Philadelphia game.
And he threw a lot of them into the hands of opposing uniforms.
Yeah, didn't play in the preseason at all.
Well, he played poorly.
And so he hasn't had a camp yet. And believe it or not, I mean, football's a game of timing at times. And I think that, on top of all the issues, I don't think he's 100% healthy. And yet, I mean, he hasn't had enough reps to prove that he can play the position at this point.
Well, and there are those who are suggesting, Brunt, that the Redskins should not be playing him.
Yeah, no, there are. You know, we had Don Banks on this week who said the opposite, who said, look, the guy's rusty, and the only way you get the rust off is for him to play. And that he said something which was true, that in the second half of those games, he looked better than he did in the first half. He looked more comfortable, and he kind of got into the rhythm of the game a bit more.
They were blowouts.
That's right, yeah. So, but, you know, if you're, you know, I don't know what the risk of re-injury is. He's wearing a great big knee brace. He certainly doesn't look comfortable, and he looks tentative, which, you know, as a human being, you'd kind of, if you were him and you'd blown out your knee, you would say, yeah, I'd probably be a bit tentative as well. But if it's a lost season in Washington, and it's a rare team that loses the first two and makes the playoffs, you know, the question is, do you let him play himself back into the game? And you'd have to, you know, you really have to believe in that case that he is at no more risk than anybody else. Or do you give the ball to Kirk Cousins, who looked pretty good when he did play last year, and say, let's let the kid sit?
Well, let's face it, though, Cousins was hurt in training camp, too.
Yes, he was.
That was one of the reasons why a lot of people thought that Griffin had to start the season, I think. Because if Cousins was healthy, they could have been patient with Griffin and given him another month.
But it's scary to watch him, right? If you watch...
None of the plays he ran last year for big games look like they're even in the playbook right now.
Yeah.
Like if you watch the plays that he dominated on last year, exploded on last year, you haven't seen anything like that, not only in terms of his body, but in terms of the Redskins even showing that they're going to run them, which says to me that they know they can't expose him for whatever reason. And, you know, John, I thought you make a good point about the injury to the backup, but when I look at that organization, every team has to have a long-term thinker in a powerful position in their organization. Somebody to say, all right, I understand we want to win in the short term, but what's the best for the second-year player in the long term? And I don't see a single person in that organization saying, hold on a second, are we doing the best for this guy, a franchise player who's in year two of his NFL career?
Well, what I say, NFL coaches who become long-term thinkers end up working on TV.
Well, there's usually, right? I know, hey, we got plenty of jobs
there's,
here.
No, there's just no...
But somebody, yeah. Like whether it's a GM or an owner or somebody.
I point... Yeah, Exhibit A, Dan Snyder.
The owner's an idiot.
So we're not going to see...
Which is part of the problem.
We're ripping NFL owners today, too. This is unbelievable.
I just don't see a lot of perspective coming from Dan Snyder on this one. But
that's part of the problem.
He's the guy that's, you know, he's got the investment. He's the guy who should be saying, hang on a second. You know? But again, I assume they have medical, you know, well, James Andrews, that has said, it's okay. He is at no more risk of being hurt than anybody else.
It's hard for me to believe that they would put him out there
if there was more risk.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that in a guy's head, he's going to be the same player, and it doesn't mean he feels the same way.
And let's remember the severity of the injury that he had and what he went through that last game. I mean, when he crumbled on the field and knowing that he was devastated both physically and mentally. So you have to wonder what fear's going through his mind.
Not only do I think that people would be pressured to play when they're not 100% healthy, but you guys know the mentality of the athlete, especially in a football dressing room. You look around, everybody's hurt. The guy, even in game one, the guys who protected your linemen, they're hurt. I mean, you look at what Derrick Rose in the NBA this year. I mean, there was a huge controversy over whether or not he should be playing or not. And his teammates were basically at the end of the season when they were getting knocked out of the playoffs, openly questioning how hurt he really was. And I do think that plays into this. You don't want to let your teammates down, and you don't want to look like the soft guy in the room.
But at the same time, when if you are, you know, a brand and a business, and you do want to play the game for a long time, whether it be Derrick Rose or Robert Griffin, don't you actually want to know that you're 100% before you go back in? I mean, I do think because there's so much money at stake now and so much importance placed on it, that I think that you actually have to take your time a little more, and you have to be a little more pragmatic about what's going on with the with your injury.
That's
a tough spot.
Trying to compare NFL players to athletes in other sports is really a difficult one because there are no guaranteed contracts. Mm-hmm. I know you can make
guaranteed
the argument,
money though, Bob.
Yeah, they get a bunch of money up front, but guys don't want to be. They want their money, but they want to play. They want to be a professional athlete. They don't want to be, you know, even though they got the cash, they don't want to be thrown into the scrap heap early in their careers. And how does that happen? By opening the door and letting somebody else get an opportunity to take your job away from you. And I mean, it's important that it's the National Football League is a prime example of that, and it doesn't really exist in other sports, not to that degree. So I understand a guy's unwillingness to let somebody else have a shot, to go out there and play when you're hurt, because you were referencing, Rose.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's slightly different.
Well,
I wonder whether Griffin is a guy pushing that button, saying, let me play, I'm ready.
You know, the Exhibit A is the guy who, if you watched the game last night, Kansas City, Philadelphia, a number one draft pick, although it was a longer period of time before it happened, Alex Smith.
Sure.
The worst thing that ever could have happened to the NFL concussion protocol was Alex Smith. He gets a concussion. Colin Kaepernick takes over. The next thing you know, the San Francisco 49ers are in the Super Bowl. Now, Smith looks like...
And it's important to note, for those that aren't aware, Smith was playing well.
Yes.
At the time he got
it. He was having a tremendous year.
Yeah. This was not a guy who was, could have been replaced at any moment. He was in no danger of losing his job.
You're totally right until that happened. And now, thankfully for him, it looks like he's landed on his feet. But if, the worst thing that could have happened to the league's concussion protocol was Alex Smith losing his job. It's a great point.
So, what's the consensus? Should he play? Should he not play? Is he being forced to play?
I don't think
he's forcing himself to play? Should the Washington, there's a lot of questions, should Washington management step in and say no?
Well, let me ask you this.
Long term, we'd rather you got made sure you were 100% healthy.
Is he playing well enough for the Redskins to score more points than the opposition? I mean, that to me is, I mean, forget about should he play. And I know he's a star, and I know he's a big brand, but at the same time, they're not playing very well as a team.
They aren't good enough. They aren't good enough to be a championship
contender.
You know,
they were a playoff team last year, Bob.
I don't think they're good enough to be a championship team. That's my personal opinion. And given that, I'd rather have my number one attraction, the guy who's more pivotal than any other player, 100%. And there are questions about whether he is. Mentally or physically.
Make another point. I just thought of it. The other thing that makes this situation potentially even worse is that the division is horrid.
Yeah.
So if you're sitting there and you're 0-2, the Giants are 1-1, or 0-2, the Cowboys are 1-1, the Eagles are 1-2. You're
wide
sitting there as Washington. You're going, hey, we could win 7 games and make the playoffs.
No, maybe not, but maybe 7-9.
That division. Your division winner gets in.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, 9-7 for sure. You're in.
9-7. You go.
Yeah, but 7-9 might be.
I know. You know, 8-8. You're somewhere around there to win that division
right
now.
I know
now.
What you mean.
So you're looking at it with your guy and you're saying, we can do it.
In a related but unrelated, very briefly, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but there may be some that aren't aware of this. Mike Holmgren in an interview with the former president, I guess, of the Cleveland Browns, wasn't he? Said he would have traded his entire draft in order to get Andrew Luck. Not a bunch of guys, all of them.
Yeah, it's precedent. It's happened before. Mike Ditka did it for Ricky Williams.
Andrew Luck would have had to pose in a wedding dress like Ricky Williams did.
Yeah, I think it would have been, you know, in hindsight, would have been a heck of a lot better to do it for Andrew Luck than for Ricky Williams.
Yeah.
You know, that didn't work out for Mike Ditka very well in New Orleans. You know, Ricky had a nice career, but he was not that guy, mm-hmm. It turned out.
Again, it goes back to, I don't mind trading a lot more to get a quarterback than I do a running back. I mean, and let's face it, how many years had we heard about Andrew Luck from the time he was at Stanford? And, you know, even the summer that he elected not to come out after his junior year to stay for one more year. I mean, he was something special.
I don't think, I'm not sure how many more NFL-ready quarterbacks have ever come out of college football, but have been more NFL-ready than Andrew Luck was when he came out of Stanford.
I think you can make that argument. The postscript to this, a couple of things you should know, is that the Gregson, the Colts general manager, turned him down, didn't think that Holmgren was serious. And then Holmgren ultimately said, I probably offered it knowing he wouldn't take it. If he'd said okay, I probably would have choked on the offer myself.
Hey, the other thing is, you know, Andrew Luck's good enough that we're going to have the discussion 5 or 6 years from now, who is the better quarterback for the Colts, Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck?
I don't know.
We're a ways away from that conversation.
I think it's going to take a lot more than that, 5 or 6 years. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's a postscript to that. What I would say to you. I had plenty of respect for, you have to have respect for Peyton Manning,
yes,
and his career at Indianapolis. I'm at the point where I'm looking a little differently even at his career in Indianapolis based upon what I've seen in Denver. This guy's special.
Oh, no question.
Just the last year and 2 games,
yeah,
in Denver have made me look at his performance in Indianapolis and say, that was no fluke. This guy's the real deal. This guy's really good and probably wasn't surrounded with as good a cast as we thought he was a lot of the time. 24 before the hour, the real bullets are next, and there's plenty of them. Stick around. You're watching or listening to Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. Before the hour, time for the bullets, little things that sometimes become big things rarely do. Oh, by the way, if you're just tuning in, where the hell you been? Brunt Friedman, Shannon McCown around the table. Item, Arian Foster, running back. Houston Texans. An ex-Tennessee football player has acknowledged that in his senior year while at Tennessee, he was taking money on the sly, which, of course, is not allowed by the NCAA. Shocking revelation? Not really, given that if you pay any attention to U.S. college football, you know that wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Who's the head coach?
A lot of guys
Homer.
Are getting that money.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it kind of comes on the heels of SI did that big blowout on Oklahoma State in the program, which revealed that players have sex, smoke weed, and occasionally get paid by boosters. And the reaction to it was kind of,
blame Sports Illustrated for shoddy reporting.
Well, kind of, yeah. And I think we are at a point where that discussion about, I think everyone assumes that big-time programs are slipping money to their players and that the players are being treated differently than other scholars on campus. And that kind of breaks the question, so what are we going to do about this? Is there a way to reconcile this idea that these people are students in a sport that creates enormous revenues for other people? Or should they be cut in officially above the table? That's kind of what this leads to.
Well, except the it's not quite that straightforward, Stephen, because 99.9% of the time, it isn't the schools that are actually given the money.
No, it's the boosters, right?
It's the boosters.
Yeah.
And so therefore, no money is coming out of these programs, the money that's generated by these programs. The tens of millions of dollars annually that these programs generate is not being impacted by the money, whatever it is, whether it's a few $100, a few $1,000.
Tends to be chump change, though, a lot of it.
Most of it's chump change.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you look at Foster's, what Foster actually said was, and let me quote him directly, "I really didn't have any money. I had to either pay the rent or buy some food. I remember the feeling of like, man, be careful. But there's nothing wrong with it. And you're not going to convince me that there's something wrong with it." End quote.
My question to him, follow-up, would have been, how come you weren't getting paid the first 3 years? Like, I was actually surprised to hear that he was only paid for 1 year at Tennessee.
Are we sure that he actually said that? That he didn't get paid the first three?
I've just, all the headlines I've seen today, and I admit I haven't read the whole body of the story, was he got paid for his senior season. That's all he admitted to.
Well, he's acknowledged getting paid in his senior season.
Right.
I don't know that he's said, I never got paid in my first 3 years.
But that is one of the things I took out of the OK State story, was that, the guys who were getting money, it wasn't like they're driving around in Porsches with that money. It was,
Living money.
It was living money. Yeah, it was because what they get as a scholarship doesn't fully cover the cost of what they have to spend.
And they can only take a certain amount of dollars for even part-time jobs.
That's right.
I think it's $3,000.
Can't have a full-time job.
The old days of being the sprinkler changer on the artificial turf, that's gone away. But Oklahoma State's a different place. I mean, when you consider what T. Boone Pickens has put into that organization, hundreds of millions of dollars as a booster of the organ, almost like an owner there.
And boosters are everywhere. And it's not a new story. I mean, I lived in Las Vegas when Larry Johnson, who went on to have a pretty good career in the National Basketball Association, was I guess, the star player. Not, I guess, he was the star player at UNLV. And I came out of a store in a strip plaza and watched Larry Johnson get out of his brand new black Porsche and walk into the very same store. Now, do I know where Larry Johnson got that Porsche? I do not. Was it somebody else's Porsche that he just borrowed to go to the store? Could have been. Never saw him again in that Porsche. Did Larry Johnson have the family wealth to be able to afford a Porsche himself? He did not. He had spent 2 years at a junior college before he went to UNLV. Mm-hmm. He, in fact, at that point, hadn't even established himself as a great superstar, although he was pretty good right from the get-go. So this little anecdote that means absolutely nothing, except this has been going on at hundreds and hundreds of schools for as long as we can remember. And I don't like it, but I'm not sure that even if you legalized payment by the schools to the athletes, do you get rid of the boosters?
No way. Best players will always get more.
In fact, you may actually exacerbate it, Bob. The boosters may feel they have more legitimate opportunity to do it. And let's face it, we're only talking about two sports.
Yes.
Men's basketball and men's football.
And here's the other thing. While we point fingers at major U.S. colleges and say, well, these athletes generate tens of millions of dollars in profit for the program. That is true. But a significant amount of that money that's generated by athletic departments goes back into the academic wings of the schools.
It usually plays for every other athletic program at the university, too.
A lot of other athletes benefit from it.
Sure.
And a lot of students benefit from it. Libraries are built and chem labs are built and all kinds of things are built that probably wouldn't be built if you didn't have those athletic programs. So I don't know which way to go on this one. I don't know that there's a definitive answer one way or the other. Make it legal, make it not legal. What's the best answer?
I don't think the thing is that I believe the whole way the schools look at it is we drag our feet until this issue goes away. We're not paying. We're never going to pay until something seismic happens that forces them to pay, and that's it. And we're just going to bury our heads until this story goes away.
But don't get a tattoo.
But don't get a tattoo. Like, you talk about that UNLV team. The story I've always wondered, Bob, it's an urban legend. I have no idea if it's true or not. And I once tried to ask Larry Johnson the question, and he laughed at it. You'll remember that Larry Johnson's first team there won the national championship. Mm-hmm. They beat Duke in 1990. They went back in 1991. They were
undefeated, going to the semifinal.
They lost to Duke in the Final Four. The rumor or the urban legend is if they had gone to the final, they would have refused to play because they hated the NCAA so much. They hated them that they were going to go to the final and not play until we get paid. That was the rumor. They lost, so we never found out. And when I asked Larry Johnson if that was true once, back when I covered the Raptors, he laughed at me. He's like, I don't know you and I'm not talking to you. So who knows?
Well, here's what I can tell you about that.
Yeah.
I sat in a convenience store, in the office of a convenience store of one of my pals in Las Vegas, where Tark used to frequent that convenience store. He used to get his gas there, and there was a Twinkie store there. It was a Chevron, just for the for the record. And sat there one morning around 9:30 in the morning when Tark came in, and it was just after that scenario had taken place. And that same question came up. And his response was, we were going to saber rattle, but they were going to play. Now, whether that's true or not, there's the answer to that question, at least off the record.
Nobody liked to challenge the NCAA more than Jerry Tarkanian.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
Nobody. last item. Tim Bezbachenko is the new general manager of the Toronto FCs. Mr. Bezbachenko is 31 years of age, has never been a general manager or, for that matter, a player that we know of any note in the sport, but he's a pretty smart guy. In his role, he comes to the FCs from the league. That's where he was working. He handled all the league's contracts with players. And, in fact, the MLS is a single entity. They don't have other people handling all. One guy is doing all the contract deals. So a guy who has a tremendous amount of experience as a contract guy is now taking a job where he doesn't have to do any contracts, where his responsibility is to identify good players, something he has absolutely no experience at doing. Do FC fans, Brunt, have any reason to be optimistic about the future based upon this hiring?
Well, he can't do any worse, can he?
It's a low bar.
That's about what I'm saying, yeah. It's the lowest bar in sport.
Can you, however, explain to me the logic in this signing?
No, I don't know how they're going to run the team. You know, what the structure is going to be. If Tim Lewicki was here, I'm sure he could explain it to us. It's not like he doesn't, he does know the league. So, who's the real boss? He does know this league.
I think that's the key. Tim Lewicki is putting in people that will execute the Lewicki plan. And this guy has knowledge of the cap issues, the contract issues of MLS. And so Tim is going to be very happy with the guy he hired.
Yes, he will be.
Yes, he will.
Whether anybody else will be, we don't know.
That's right. Because, Tim's going to judge the players anyway. Yeah, he's going to judge the players.
I think you're
will
right.
that be before or after he's judging basketball players, or during the time he's judging hockey players, or when he's building new stadiums and arenas and looking for new revenue streams for MLSC? I mean,
it's a busy guy.
It's in between taking pictures down and then putting them back up.
He going to be busy.
Yes, sir.
Somehow I wonder if he's going to have time for all this. Oh, well, not for me to judge. Freege, lovely to see you again.
Good to see you too, Bob.
Brunt,
see you soon,
excellent
Bob.
Job this week. Shannon, buy a watch. This is Primetime. Good night from Toronto.